I want the children,
crooned the King Witch.
Give me the children.
There was a horrible silence. What children? Said Encanto. The King Witch pointed at Czar and at Wish.
The boy is mine already,
said the King Witch.
And the girl is special.
There's absolutely nothing special about Wish. Look at her, said Sycorax briskly, but there may have been a little anxiety in her voice. She's totally ordinary, and if anything, for a warrior, just a little substandard.
They all looked at Wish, standing uncomfortably on one leg. She didn't look remotely special, a small, skinny little child with an eye patch and hair sticking out in all directions.
She has something I need,
continued the King Witch.
I already have some of it, but only as much as was in the very tip of her very little finger. Now I want all of it to share with my fellow witches. Give her to me now.
And what, said the Queen with considerable asperity, are you intending to do with her?
I will eat her,
said the King Witch. Which was not very nice, but what did you expect a witch to be like? There was another horrified silence.
That is ridiculous, snapped Queen Sycorax, magnificently scornful and every inch a monarch. Of course you can't eat my child, you disgusting creature. I never heard of anything more barbaric.
Give me the child,
repeated the King Witch.
I will swallow her whole. Give me the child.
I am the queen of these territories, said Sycorax imperiously. We have a warrior army, fully armed with iron. Take your witches out of here before we kill you all. Go!
The King Witch gave a ghastly shriek and spread wide his great dark wings and leapt into the air. And as he flew up, up, up into the airy heights, it looked for one moment as if he was flying away, trying to escape. Spare a thought for the poor witch smeller. This was meant to be his moment. He had been enjoying the battle with the wizards, but this was even better. As the King Witch soared upward, the witch smeller was rubbing his hands together. Oh, this was too good. All his wishes had come true at once. A witch! At last he had found a real live witch after a lifetime of looking. And not just one witch, a whole host of the creatures. They weren't extinct after all.
Get out the witch-destroying weapon, yelled the witch-smeller joyfully. Prepare to face the full force of iron, thing of evil.
He put down his iron visor, almost chuckling to himself. The witch-smeller imagined, encased in iron as he was, iron breastplates, iron helmet, that he would be quite safe against the witch. It might look scary, this creature, but no magic could work against iron. He would first get rid of the big one, and then turn the might of the weapon on all of the others. And then he would go back to the capital in triumph and in glory, with lots of witch beaks to show the emperor. The witch smeller was just enjoying this happy little thought, when the King Witch turned on him. High up in the air, the King Witch turned, in a great, beautiful, glorious swoop, if you'd been in the mood to admire the swooping of witches, which the witch smeller most certainly wasn't. And with a grand gesture of his feathered wing, the King Witch pointed all five of his taloned fingers at the witch smeller and his two imperial giant killers who were struggling to launch the witch-destroying weapon. And the magic came blinding out of the five fingers with the fierceness with which it might blast out of five wizard staffs. 50 years the witch smeller had studied witch hunting and the pursuit of magic, and now he was looking up through his little iron visor at the thunderous sky and realizing, oh my goodness, that the King Witch was spelling at him. And that was exactly the same moment that he had a tiny flicker of concern as he realized, horror of horrors, how small he was, how insignificant, how unprepared for the spells coming down at him in brilliant stars of light. The witch smeller didn't even have time to get the Imperial Giant Killers to launch his witch-destroying weapon. It had taken years for the witch smeller's father and for the witch smeller's father's father to design that weapon, and they reckoned they had got it pretty much perfect. But this is an excellent example of how things that work magnificently in theory don't necessarily work in practice. The witch smeller got as far as shouting, "Launch the whip!" before the spells hit him. The stars of light hit the witch smeller full on the chest and bounced neatly off onto the other magic hunters standing around him, one after the other. One second the witch smeller was standing in full body armour, erect and splendid if a little uneasy, with his axe raised high above his head, shouting impressive instructions. The next second the armour had stiffened around him and solidified, and he was caught within it as if it were the trunk of a tree. His visor came down. "Hello?" said the witch smeller in a bewildered sort of way, and the echo of his own voice came back to him from within his metal prison. "Hello?" And all around him, his fellow magic hunters were similarly caught, stuck in their armour, frozen in various poses of attack, one of them bending down to light the fuse that might set off the witch-destroying weapon, also frozen, another with arm above head, about to launch a spear, others in the act of taking their swords from their scabbards. Iron. Their armour was made of iron. How could the witch's magic be working on iron? With a terrible sinking of the heart, Zar realised how. Back in their last adventure, when they first met the King Witch in Queen Sycorax's dungeon, the King Witch had drunk up some of Wish's magic, and now, for the very first time, he had a little magic that could work on iron. The King Witch had not taken enough of Wish's magic to do more than make the armour freeze. He couldn't make it move or dance, but freezing was quite enough to paralyse the witch smeller and his band of magic hunters. "Are you all right in there, pest controller?" snapped Queen Sycorax, peering through the witch smeller's visor. "Enjoying your first encounter with a real witch?"
"Help!"
said the witch smeller in reply, and the soldiers all around him echoed, "Help! Help! Help!" as they tried and failed to move the armour that had solidified all around them. Queen Sycorax sniffed. "So much for your famous witch-destroying weapon."
"The King Witch shouldn't have been able to do that," said Incanzo grimly.
But they didn't have time to absorb any of the implications of this, for the King Witch whirled round and screamed,
"Let me show you why you should do as I say. Witches, attack!"
16. The Witches Attack. With a terrible smell of burning feathers, the witches swooped. When witches attack, they assault all your senses at the same time. Their stink is unbearable, the worst smell you can possibly imagine. Their scream is like the shriek of 500 angry foxes, and it buries itself in your brain and reverberates around your head till you feel like you might go crazy.
"Warriors, wizards, giants, lynxes," cried Sycorax, "stop fighting each other, fight the witches!"
And Incanzo held up his staff and yelled out the same orders. Sycorax and Incanzo didn't really need to shout those instructions. The noise and the smell were so horrid that the wizards and the warriors were instinctively banding together to fight these new, terrifying assailants. Warriors and wizards and giants were in one instant fighting back to back on the same side. But there was an astonishing number of the witches, a cloud of them, like a swarm of gigantic, malevolent crows. The witches were happy to attack the magic things, but they were still afraid of the warriors, and they couldn't attack them like the King Witch could.
"Hold fast! Defend your positions!" cried Sycorax, that great war leader. "Fight the witches together!"
The King Witch sharpened his talons against each other like a blacksmith sharpening a gigantic sword. And then, quick as a weasel, he stretched up his claw and screamed an unintelligible gargle of command.
"We need to defend the children," said Incanzo, jumping up aboard his lynx,
and Sycorax glided up behind him, side-saddle, arms crossed, for she would have died rather than put her arms around Incanzo's waist. It was remarkable the way she did not lose her balance as the lynx leapt forward. But then Queen Sycorax was really rather a remarkable woman.
"Go away!" shouted Tsar, as Incanzo pulled the lynx to a halt beside him. "I don't need your help!" "You have to let us defend you, Tsar," said Incanzo. "I had no idea that creature was after you."
In the heat of the moment, and in his anxiety, Tsar admitted something that he had not yet really wanted to admit, even to himself.
"The King Witch isn't after me. He's after Wish," said Tsar. "Wish is the girl of destiny. We need to help Wish."
Above Tsar's head, the whir of soft wings. 5 witches soared, and they did not pause for Tsar. Tsar was right. They were after Wish, while her magic was still untrained and uncontrolled. Wish was in the centre of the courtyard. She'd been about to take off her eye patch, but the witches had attacked with such suddenness that she'd only just nudged it up a smidgen. And as they attacked, Incanzo leapt from the back of his snowcat and pointed his fingers towards Wish, making a defensive magical force field the size of a very large, round, invisible boulder spring up around Wish to protect her. The force field burned bright as the witches struck again and again, like great black ravens attacking a tasty morsel. Such was the force of their onslaughts that Wish was rolled drunkenly round the courtyard, thrown about inside the force field with such violence that she was unable to take off her eye patch. Every time she put up her arms to do it, she was thrown off her balance once more. The King Witch landed in a blur of wings and crouched down, long black drips of saliva pouring from both sides of his jaws.
"It's weakening!"
screeched the King Witch, 3 eyes glowing red as the great slugging force of the witch's spell attacks began to crush the force field protecting Wish, punching great dents in it as it rolled pathetically this way and that. Tsar ran towards them, the enchanted sword slippy in his trembling hand.
"Get off her!" cried Tsar, waving the sword at the King Witch.
The King Witch crouched lower.
"You fool," he whispered. "Do you not know, boy, that you are mine?"
"I am not yours," screamed Tsar.
"You have to be careful what you wish for,"
crooned the King Witch.
"And you wished for witch blood. Willingly took it. Put out your hand and made the cut yourself. X marks the spot."
How could Tsar deny it? His whole hand beneath the glove was burning a bright, terrible green of such vividness that it turned the glove itself transparent.
"And now I control you,"
said the King Witch.
"It was I who urged you to escape from the prison of Gorminkrag, and I who helped you to do it. You brought her to me."
"No," said Tsar, very white. "It's not true." But it is only sometimes when you reach the end of the quest that you realise what it has been about all along. They had fallen into a trap set by a King Witch. All along, they had thought they were making free choices, but silent, frozen, unmoving, the King Witch had been controlling them, like the spider in the middle of a great grey web. The King Witch turned his dead face to Tsar.
"You can't fight me," he said.
Tsar's bright green hand burned hot with such fire that it made poor Tsar cry out, and it was as if his arm had a mind of its own. His own hand, holding onto the enchanted sword, dragged him forward, with his body desperately trying to pull the other way. But the hand was inexorable. It pulled him with dreadful force. He tried to resist, holding onto his right elbow with his other hand. But like it or not, for good or for evil, the rest of his body was attached to that hand, so what could he do? Heels dragging, he was hauled toward Wish, who was still being thrown about in Incanzo's force field.
"If the sword kills witches, it can kill her too, and I can eat her dead just as well as alive,"
whispered the King Witch.
"You can kill her for me, boy. Humans are weak. She won't want to hurt you. Remember who you are. You're a wizard, and she's a warrior. Wizards hate warriors.
I'm sorry, Wish, I can't stop it, shouted Zar as his bright green hand brought the sword down on the red force field and broke through it. It shattered into thousands of pieces that exploded round the courtyard like tiny splinters of bright red glass before melting into the air.
Good, good,
crooned the King Witch.
Now go for the girl.
Wish stood there, her fingers crooked now underneath the eye patch. She couldn't lift it to fight Zar. Poor Zar was still trying to control his own hand, but the combination of his arm with the witch stain and the enchanted sword was too strong for him, and he was being dragged nearer and nearer Wish, with the sword raised above his head to attack her, even though he was pulling in the other direction with all his might. I can't fight this. It's too strong for me, thought Zar wretchedly.
Don't think about your weaknesses. Think about your strengths, shouted Caliburn. Work with what you do have, not with what you don't.
Use your disobedience, Zar, ordered Queen Sycorax, shouting from behind him. You have plenty of that!
Zar turned and raised the sword towards the King Witch. He couldn't fight the King Witch completely, he wasn't strong enough for that, but he could work with the King Witch's own desires. Zar had learnt that lesson from the King Witch, because that was exactly what the King Witch had been doing to him.
You want the sword, Witch? Shouted Zar. You can have it!
With every single ounce of disobedience in his disobedient body, Zar shouted,
No! Take that, you stinking great feather-armed freak of a nightmare witch!
And he threw the sword with all of his might towards the King Witch. There was a moment when it seemed as if the sword wasn't going to leave the green grip of Zar's hand. But Zar had guessed rightly. The King Witch did want that sword, for it was a very powerful magical object. The King Witch's own wanting loosened Zar's grip. The sword sailed through the air and landed a couple of feet in front of him with a loud clatter.
I will not do it, said Zar, chest heaving with the struggle of it, because I like Wish.
The King Witch was astonished at this defiance. The boy should be his entirely. How was it possible that Zar would not do his bidding? But it did not change the ending. The King Witch would finish this himself. He reached out his taloned hand and grasped the enchanted sword. He said some very powerful words of a spell to bind the sword to his hand so that the girl could not take it from him. With one, two beats of his great wings, he leapt in the air, wings spread wide, up, up, up. And then he swooped, terrible mouth agape, to swallow the child whole.
17. Taking off the eye patch.
And Wish took off her eye patch.
Taking off the eye patch was like opening the door into another world.
Looking through her right eye, it was as if she was standing on the top of a snowy mountain where the snow was so glitteringly bluey white that it dazed you. The colours were so forceful, the reds so red, the greens so purely green that it overwhelmed her, and she cried out now as they hit her almost like a physical blow. She'd forgotten just how sickening this feeling was, how terrifying.
Very few wizards before or since have ever had the rare power of a magic eye. A power that misted up Wish's brain with such furious energy that her hair leapt up around her like an electrical ruff, and the ground beneath her swayed like a sea, and the broken walls shook further, and all around lost their balance as the magic came screaming out of her eye and met the blast of the swooping King Witch's magic. Closer. Closer the King Witch dived, so close that Wish could see right down the ghastly maw of his open throat, the enchanted sword pointed right towards her. Oh, by the gods of water, what can I do? I have all this magic, but I don't know how to control it. She tried to imagine removing the enchanted sword from the King Witch's hand, but it was stuck fast by the spell he had used. What else can I do? Focus on what you do know, not what you don't. Iron, thought Wish. I know how to move iron. All that practicing she had done in the punishment cupboard and Caliburn's lessons back on the sweet track. All around her were the figures of the witch smeller and his magic hunters, with their armour frozen around them, stiff as statues. And then, almost the very second that the thought came into her head, the helmet of the nearest magic hunter began to untwist as Wish's magic made it move. She didn't even have to point her hand at it.
All it took was a thought.
Be careful what you wish for, witch, whispered Wish. You wanted magic that works on iron, and you shall have it.
The King Witch was halted abruptly mid-air by a flying iron helmet that hurtled through the sky and, clang, attached itself to the enchanted sword, making the witch's sword arm so heavy that his whole body lurched violently to the right. The King Witch tried to shake off the helmet, but it was stuck fast, for the helmet had come into the orbit of the spell that the King Witch had cast to bind the sword into his hand, and it would not budge. However hard the King Witch shook it, clang, clang, another helmet and an iron glove soared through the air and stuck to the other side of the sword. The King Witch said the words of the undoing to take off the binding spell he had cast, and he had the first stirrings of unease.
What is that?
The King Witch asked himself in a startled sort of way. For as the enchanted sword sprang out of the King Witch's hand and dropped point first into the ground, the magic hunter's frozen armour had exploded apart, leaving the bewildered witch-smeller and his soldiers standing in their underclothes, staring upwards in astonishment while their armour rocketed towards the King Witch. Spears and helmets and chains and knives and swords and breastplates, not to mention an entire witch-destroying weapon, the whole armoury of iron that the magic hunters carried with them on magic hunting expeditions, were sailing through the air towards the King Witch as if they were arrows fired at a bird. More iron, thought Wish. More and more and more. The army of iron attached itself to the King Witch as if he were a magnet. The King Witch tried to beat all the iron things off, but they clogged up his wings, and the harder he tried to fight them off, the harder they stuck fast, until he became smothered in a thick ball of iron, iron that melted around him as it met the green heat of his magic. It weighed the King Witch down, and he plunged deeper and deeper in the air, and Wish added more and more and more and more and more until he fell to the earth like a stone. Zar and Wish scrambled out of the way over the heaving, tumbling earth as the Witch, encased in iron, landed with such force that he created a great crater in the courtyard of the ruined castle of Pentaglion. Just as the iron solidified in a final enclosing ball, the King Witch shot one last blast of magic from his 5-talon fingers and the magic came screaming out and hit Wish on the chest, and there was a mind-blowingly loud noise and a blinding white light, and something exploded with such energy that Zar was knocked over. The earth came to a shuddering halt at last, and great clouds of dust billowed and wafted across the shattered remains of the courtyard. The ball of iron that encased the King Witch was, strange to say, exactly the shape of the stone that used to be Queen Sycorax's stone that takes away magic. Maybe because it was a shape that Wish had seen before. The clouds of witches who had been hovering, waiting, watching for the outcome of this battle, shrieked across the sky, howling and raging against the defeat of their leader, before dispersing, flying away, who knows where. The ball of iron rocked once, twice on its pointed axis, and then it rolled to the edge of the battlements, and fell over the edge, and down, down into the ocean below, before disappearing under the waves. The wizards and the warriors, the witch-smeller, the druids and the magical creatures staggered to their feet, coughing and choking, trying to work out exactly what had just gone on. Queen Sycorax leapt up and ran towards Zar, Inkanzo and Bodkin running by her side. The dust fell all around them like blue rain. Zar picked up the enchanted sword which had landed right in front of him. The writing on the blade had got so scratched and rubbed away on both sides by the helmet and the iron things that it now just read, once. We did it! Again! Grinned Zar as he put the sword into his scabbard. The two monarchs reached him where he stood, ragged and shaken, his quiff a little awry but still Zar-like in his jubilation.
I told you we could do it, father! And did you see, Bodkin? Did you see Caliban? He cried, punching the air in triumph. I did fight the King Witch! I told you I could!
What on earth is the boy talking about? Snapped Queen Sycorax. Where is my daughter?
There she is, said Zar,
pointing at the great cloud of gentle, shimmering, bright blue dust falling around them. Queen Sycorax was without words.
She exploded, explained Zar.
Queen Sycorax's chest heaved as she looked around at the clouds of blue dust before
exploded, she said in horror. My daughter exploded. What do you mean she exploded?
And why are you celebrating? The child saved you, you horrible boy! You're as bad as that witch!"
If she hadn't been such a very great queen, you might have thought that Sycorax staggered a little. She certainly turned deathly pale, and then she knelt down on the floor where the enchanted spoon and 30 iron pins lay quiet and cold and lifeless. She reached out a trembling hand to touch them. Squeeze Juice whispered,
"Don't you worries, Ice Queen, don't you worries. She'll be back,"
putting his little claw-like hands lovingly on the bewildered queen's cheek. Queen Sycorax had given her heart away long ago. But kneeling in the dust there, 1, 2, 3 tears dropped from her cold blue eyes.
"Out of the way! Out of the way!" said the one sprite, swooping from nowhere, jumping from the back of the hovering falcon and collecting the tears, 1, 2, 3, as they dropped from the cheek of the mourning queen.
Inkanzo stepped in hurriedly. "For shame, Za! You have to explain! Your daughter will regenerate, Sycorax. She has a magic eye, which makes her a very great enchanter, and very great enchanters have more than one life."
"Regenerate," said Queen Sycorax, blinking blankly. "Magic eye? More than one life?"
She had forgotten how horribly confusing magical people were. They couldn't even obey the normal rules about life and death.
"When? When will she regenerate?" gabbled Sycorax.
"In a moment or two," said Inkanzo, soothingly.
"It can take a while. In the meantime, we have to be careful not to step on any of this blue dust."
"This blue dust is my daughter," said Queen Sycorax, looking around in astonishment and horror.
"What is that man doing?"
hissed Squeeze Juice, eyes narrowing. That man was the Druid Commander. The Druid Commander was behaving in rather a peculiar manner. He was working frantically, and as they looked more closely, they could see he was actually spelling the blue dust with his spelling staff, collecting bright clouds of it and putting it in a gourd.
"Yes," said Inkanzo, very puzzled. "What on earth are you doing, Druid Commander?"
"Don't you see? The girl, the enchantress, has magic mixed with iron, which makes her very dangerous," said the Druid Commander. "Quick, we don't have much time. We must trap her in here and then she won't be able to regenerate."
"Be careful there, Commander," said Inkanzo sharply. "We're talking about the pieces of a human being here."
"An extremely hazardous human being," said the Druid Commander.
"How dare you take advantage of my daughter's dust-like state to attempt to imprison her?" snapped Queen Sycorax.
"Don't you move any closer, Queen," warned the Druid, pointing his staff at her, "or I will put the lid on this gourd and throw it into the sea, and that will be far worse for your daughter than you can imagine, for she shall be half here and half there."
Inkanzo and Sycorax froze, for a state of limbo was a dreadful fate. But the werewolf stepped forward, growling, low, ominously, deep in his throat.
"Get back," ordered Inkanzo. "That druid is dangerous."
The werewolf ignored him.
"What are you doing, werewolf?"
screamed the Druid Commander, madly sweeping the blue dust into the gourd in great drifts.
"Step back, you evil-bound beast. Halt, you loveless furball. I'm doing historically important work here."
And then Zar had a brilliant idea.